I'm probably going to be a terrible husband, but I'll be a great, fantastic dad. And I said, if she doesn't want to stay, she can leave. Just the kid stays with me.
Welcome to The Art of Fatherhood, a podcast that takes you on the journey of fatherhood. Now here's your host, Art Eddy.
This week's The Art of Fatherhood podcast is being brought to you by RPACT. RPACT is the one app every parent needs to keep their children safe when online and teach them healthy digital habits. With RPACT, it is a breakthrough parental control app that harnesses the power of the internet and application blocking in order to teach children proper device use and responsibility. It is the most comprehensive parental control app and family locator, and it's perfect for family of any size. RPACT is easy to use, easy to set up, and great for parents and families who are concerned with their children's overuse of technology. Whether you're introducing a device to your child for the first time or simply have a teenager who spends way too much time on social media, RPACT is the perfect parental control app solution for your family. For more information and download the RPACT app, go to their website at rpact.com. And make sure you check out my interview with Michelle Habner from RPACT as we talk about her parenthood journey as well as great ways that you can keep your kids safe while they grow up in this digital age. What's going on, everyone? Art Eddy here for the Art of Fatherhood podcast online. I'm very happy to have Eric Nagel. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me, sir. How are you doing?
Hello, sir. How are you? It's been many, many years since I think I've seen you in person.
I know.
When did you move down there?
2015, we moved down here.
All right. So it had to have been just before that. Were you guys at Comic-Con or something? Did you guys do something at New York Comic-Con?
We did something at Comic-Con, but you were always great for bringing us on, you know, talking about beers, talking about pop culture on your shows and all that good stuff.
The satellite radio shows, yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. And it was because the guys I used to, well, I still do Masters of None with, we were all on radio. Jay Wolf knew you. And so we kind of like all, and then Mike interned, I think, for you as well. So, you knew him. And so it was just great that you embraced us and we did stuff for a little bit. And now we're kind of doing our own thing. And I love the fact that when you became a dad, you're like, I got to talk to you. Yeah. I was like, nice.
Because I've known of your podcast for a long time. You know, I was always admired of how you built this up and how successful you got with essentially one theme for the podcast. Like, you talk about other different things, but if you look at like whatever the description is for your show or to get a feel for it, it's like, well, he talks about fatherhood stuff. There's other things, but this is essentially the area that he goes in. And then just over time, I'm seeing your social media and like, you got this guest. I go, man, there is something into this wholesome nonsense that that he really tapped into. And, you know, good for Art for being able to pull this off. But I mean, he's had major talent and he had all these like impressive giveaways. And I was like, how is he? I'm like, he at one point you were doing way better than I am, which is fine. I had no problem with that. But I was like, how is he not more like, how hasn't company picked this up? Like, your kind of branding, your what you do here is PG at worst, you know, like at worst. How is something like this not scooped up? Had you been a celebrity, had you been like Robert Pattinson and did a fatherhood podcast, you'd have Spotify paying you $40 million to do 12 episodes and then you'd be good. But you know, kudos to you. You work your ass off on this. So
I'm happy, but I'm also depressed because I'm like, yeah, I should be making some more money, right?
You definitely should. What you're doing is gold for sales right now. Like, this was not where in the world that I grew up in for radio and television. It was always to go the edgy way and do more irreverent stuff, you know?
Yeah.
You're, you know, kind of wholesome, having some big name guests on there. And I'm like, he should be making, this is like something NPR should have picked up or something else. And I don't know what's going on, but we isolate this and put this out there. Art Eddy should be making $11 billion.
Not only are you nice and, you know, bringing me on, you know, me and the guys on the show, but you're pumping me up, man. I appreciate that. But we're here to talk about you, not me. We're going to be talking about, you know,
we're not here to talk about your Star Wars wall and all the one-up machines that you got back there.
First
you're
of
living
all,
the lavish podcast life, my friend.
Yeah, but so are you, man. I mean, of course, you know, for people, obviously people know that, you know, you're the producer for Opie and Anthony. You do a lot more stuff now, too. You got your own show. You got actually a bunch of shows we'll get into, but
you can appreciate the stuff I have behind my wall because, you know, people can see behind you, man. You got a lot of great stuff there too. It's when you work in radio, things come to you for free and you have people sign it and all this other stuff, and it's great.
That was one of my favorite hobbies to do, like outside of doing the show.
Yeah.
Norton always had to get celebrity photos, so I kind of learned that from him. But I used to find weird things all the time from different stores and vendors and things. And I go, oh, there's some kind of celebrity name on this, or this is a character from a movie. I'll go, maybe at some point they'll show up at work and I'll have it. And I had all this stuff saved. And every time somebody came in, I had something weird or unique. And everyone's like, where did you get that? And I was like, oh, I had this for... You know, for a while, I said, one day I'll show you photos, but over there, there's a door that goes a little mini hallway down to another room, which is a vault room. I kid you not. There is a huge lead 1920-ish banker safe in there.
Whoa.
That was
kind of like, so I'm picturing like Ant-Man, right? In the first Ant-Man with Paul Rudd, like the safe with the suit, like that.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Something like that. I mean, this is like something where, you know, like Bonnie and Clyde would try to rob the small bank, and you have the guy with the stethoscope trying to hear the clicks on the thing. That's what that thing is. Like this, that thing is the equivalent of, if here's a rarity, Indiana Jones 4, when he was in the refrigerator and the nuclear test went off and he still survived. That would be my failsafe. I couldn't breathe, but I could go in there and not get any radiation or anything.
Of course, you bring your family in there too. Now that you're being a dad, no, but it's funny.
There's room for me and certain collectibles in there. Everyone else was like, "Well, look, this was either I'm going to die with them, or I got a chance." I know that's not very fatherly, but maybe I'll, you know what? I'll clear a shelf to put the baby on. She can fit in there right now.
There you go. I think the only time Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull can have a positive influence is just your story right there, and that's it. That's the only time there could be a positive.
The only good scene was that he survived in this old, you know, lead-based refrigerator in a fake town that was supposed to look like Madison Avenue 1950s America, and then he looks out and he sees, oh, there's a mushroom cloud. He hops into the fridge, or something blew him into the fridge. I forgot
the scene,
but he survived. Because he had I don't know what it's called, but we'll call it like a radiation king. Like he had a radiation king refrigerator, and then he pops out. And I was like, oh, that's the only thing I think I like about this movie right now. And it turned out to be that way.
And who knows that Indiana Jones, like offspring, could all of a sudden know how to swing from vine to vine with the monkeys. Like that was, I was just like, what's going on here? Like what happened?
Here's the thing. I get a lot of when I tell people I like that scene, because everyone tells me how terrible that scene is. And it really is. But you also got to look at how that was coordinated, the special effect, the way it was going. It's like, wow, I get what they were going for. It's not bad. Shia LaBeouf is an a-hole, beep, whatever. I don't know how you do this with your show.
There goes my PG rating.
Right. Yeah, you just went from Spotify to Pandora now. Oh, no. So, you know, like minus him, because he was the most annoying part, but everything else, he's, you know, Russians and Jeeps being chased through the Congo. Why not?
Yeah.
I thought that, you know, it was fine. It was what it was.
So, you know, since we're kind of talking about careers and all that other good stuff, like that's, we'll get into the father in a second, just since we're on this topic, man, really cool to see like everything that you've done is just from a, you know, producer standpoint and seeing, you know, being the producer for O&A and just like now running your own shows and all that. I think it's remarkable. And again, like before we started recording, you're like, well, you have to pay the bills. I'm like, yeah, you do. But to stay in like in this industry and in the entertainment field for how long have you do, man, I got to give kudos to you for doing that. What do you, I mean, and I know you're not like a sappy type of guy, but what are you most proud of with everything you've accomplished so far? I mean, there's gotta be something that you like, you're really proud of in your career, right?
Well, there's a few things that I'm proud of, I guess. I'm proud I got to the point that I did with Opie and Anthony. Like we were, you know, one of the biggest shows on the planet as far as the radio genre goes, number two behind Howard, which is no easy feat because there was all these other shows at that, you know, at one point that were gunning for that position and couldn't get to the level that that Opie and Anthony were at. So I was lucky to be part of that. I was proud to be New York radio at such an early age. That's always been a real happy, fantastic moment in my life, because that's all I grew up in the shadows of New York City. I grew up on Long Island, and hearing all these legendary shows and voices, and you're like, man, one day this is what I want to do. And getting to be able to work with some of these people and then getting on a show of that size and then being able to do my own show, which I started in 2014 on satellite radio on the Opie and Anthony channel. In fact, I was the last thing on that channel before Anthony got fired. And then we had to scrap everything and rename it, rebrand it, all of that stuff. My show had just launched. I did one episode and then we were off for about a month because Anthony got fired till we figured out everything else. Then we returned. Doing that was really like the main highlight of my career, was being able to do my own show on a international platform and not just like, you know, not knocking podcasting and video streaming because everybody's got a potentially a world audience, but this was a, you know, a narrow dedicated audience that, you know, was somebody was going to be listening to it at some point. And being able to do that for a little over three years on satellite. And then, unfortunately, being, you know, we got let go. And then luckily 3 weeks later, iHeart picked us up. So managing to make that jump to another platform and keep it going, whether we're, I mean, we're not huge by any means, like we're not a household name. We're not known like some of the other shows because there's not that many shows left, but we're not known in that like kind of lexicon, but we're still existing. We just passed 7 years. That I think I'm really proud, the proudest outside of family stuff. Yeah. Career wise, that's my, I think that's my biggest acclamation to what I do.
Yeah, no, you say like, oh, we might not be a household name, but I mean, again, for having that staying power, again, before we're, you know, pressing record, like we were just talking about like how things can like just fluctuate, and like you have a show 1 week and then boom, it's done. Like you know, you were talking about your own show and then like the one episode, like, all right, now we gotta rebrand it. No, but for being in there 7 years, dude, that's legit. And so I appreciate you kind of sharing that, because
it all comes out of, you know, passion and love for what you're doing and loving the business. Or I mean, there's not much to that business left, but knowing the history, knowing the players, knowing just what works and why you love it and why people love listening to it. And then also you mix in changing and adapting out of necessity and at some points desperation, you know, when things blow up and, you know, not due to you, any fault of your own. And now all of a sudden it's like, I'm not working there anymore. What am I going to do? How do I parlay this into something else that could be equal or bigger or, you know, sustainable? So yeah, you got to have the passion, you got to have the love to do what you do. And then when things like that, it's, you do whatever you can out of desperation and necessity. So,
but again, like you saw the evolution and, you know, especially from where you started in radio to now, like you're like, all right, you had the experience, you had the wherewithal, and you're like, all right, it's either sink or swim. And I know how to swim in these waters, even though they're changing digitally, the platforms, all that good stuff. But like, You've seen the evolution. And when did you kind of know in your mind, like, all right, this is where it's going, podcasts, different, you know, YouTube, all that other stuff, Twitch. When did you kind of see the light and being like, all right, this is the way it's going? And things change, okay? Like newspapers, radio, TV, all that stuff, things will change. Are you happy with the evolution? I kind of miss the radio days, but I see the way people are, you know, taking in media. For you, what do you... when did you see the evolution, and two, are you okay with how it's evolved?
There was a couple of points where I started to see the evolution of pretty much the decline of radio as we knew it. One was finding out that CBS had lost confidence in their free FM formatting and syndication stuff. And when we started losing affiliates and we didn't have ratings issues, they were just changing stations or selling stations. This was beginning of 2009. And then, then figuring out, I'm like, well, wait. And I was the first to figure out through other channels and stuff within the company and other. And I was like, wait, they're not telling us that we're going to be done. Like we had a sales, a promotional event for Guinness for St. Patrick's Day in Manhattan at a big Irish bar. And we were promoting it and you know, talking about it. And then I found out that the bar contacted somebody who contacted me asking if they could talked to somebody from the show. Yeah. And then they reached out and they said, hey, so your company just canceled everything. What are you talking about? We're still running ads. Like, yeah, they just said we're not doing this and they're canceling everything. Okay, that's something. So then I'm piecing all this other stuff together. I go, the company's changing the format where they're dropping us. They're dropping everything else. So that was the first thing. I was like, wow, things are changing fast, because we didn't have a problem, but they were getting rid of all talk programming and all the syndication stuff. So that was the first one. The second one, I think it was around 2014. It was shortly after ONA ended, and it was just Opie and Jimmy at the time.
Yeah.
When Pandora came around, and everybody used to talk about Pandora, that you could watch, I mean, listen to music, any kind of music in the office. If you paid for a subscription, you didn't have to worry about the skips, you know, like you only got a certain amount of skips for that. And then it dawned on me when I got a chance to play around with it and looking how this was growing, I realized radio, music radio, is just somebody else's playlist. You know, the perception changed. I mean, I guess we always knew that because it was a playlist.
Yeah.
When I said, oh my God, if the public perception changes that listening to radio is, now we all know playlists, share playlists through Spotify, Apple, whatever. But if somebody sends you a playlist or texts you, it says like, hey, check this out. Your first instinct is to go, ew, I don't want to playlist, you know?
Yeah.
No, mom, I don't want to hear this, or you know, your best friends or something. Even though you may trust their opinion, you like what they're at. The fact they sent you something that they made and they said, I want you to listen to it. You want to go, no, I don't want to listen to it. So if you feel that way about your friends and your family, if you wake up to the idea that I turn on the radio station, I can't skip the songs they're playing, and I realize I got to sit here in the car and listen to somebody else's playlist, why would I listen to radio? And it took a few years, but it came true. A lot of people started to realize, like, I'm not sitting in the car just because it's on and it's free. I can save everything. I got podcasts and I got music playlists on my phone. Data plans are next to nothing now, so you don't have to worry about, you know, charges and all that. You stream your own stuff. You have it all downloaded. You don't need to listen to the music radio anymore. So around 14 is when I kind of realized music radio was going to be screwed.
Yeah.
But I always thought radio is always about, for me, talk programming. It's all about the personalities. Support the personalities. Who cares about the classic rock station or the new pop station or whatever? That's cute, but it doesn't really matter. Support the morning shows on those stations. Support the people who aren't just DJs. And then that all of a sudden became a thing. Like, well, that costs money, so we don't want to pay for talk programming anymore. We don't want to pay for morning shows anymore. So 2018, I started to see that that talk radio is now going to be dead. And as we're in 2021 now, in the last couple of years, iHeart had like four massive national layoffs. And then CBS was bought by Entercom, which is now Odyssey, I think it's called. And they just started firing morning shows. You would see articles posted in the trades, or what's left of the trade.
Yeah.
It's like, we were number two in Detroit. And then all of a sudden, right after a show, we got called into a meeting. They said, this was your last day. And they handed you a check for 20 grand and said, you're done. Like, what? Wait, why? So then they've been simulcasting like shows out of, not even syndication, simulcasting shows out of New York for their alternative stations, for their country stations, whatever. Whatever you hear in New York is what you're hearing in these markets. And that was the final thing. I was like, wow, radio. I don't know how radio comes back from this. They keep showing marketing news and CNBC and all that stuff. They showed like, look how great radio is doing. Still 35% of the market. I said, I still think that's older people, you know, people older than us that are just out of habit.
Yeah.
Radio on. I said, when like our parents' generation dies off, you're not going to see that anymore, because everybody can just put everything in their phone. I got shows. I got podcasts, I've got video streaming, I've got music, anything I want is right there. I don't need to listen to a radio anymore. And I've always been a big proponent of supporting personalities and supporting shows, even if they're on Patreon right now. Kick them a couple bucks. If you listen to them every week, you don't want to get the bonus episode they have, but they do a tip thing, just tip them.
Yeah.
You know, it's a couple bucks out of your thing. It's like when people steal movies all the time, and it's like, no, I'm not going to pay for that, I'll just steal it. Like, do you like watching their movies? Yeah, I watched all the whole franchise or whatever. It's like, so pay for something. They're not going to keep making these if you don't help them out here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I saw it in stages, and it's just sad because it's what I grew up with, what I loved. And when we do our show still sounds a bit of a radio format, not a podcast format. But it's radio in a podcast format. We, like, you know,
yeah,
it's about the presentation. It's about the organization. It's about the production high energy. You know, you're setting the energy tone for what you want to do with your show and make it feel like a program, not just everyone turns it on and hey, how you do? Because not everyone can do a Bill Burr solo show. Yeah. Not everyone can do like a Marc Maron, you know, pontification segment before you get to the big guest and and do all that. Like everyone's got their different style that works, but not everyone can do this stuff. So I try to keep.
Why not? I got a laptop and I bought something on Amazon for a podcast kit. What are you talking about, Eric? I could do it.
You got a format. You got a sense of programming with yeah. you. You know, like you go to your Art Eddie's show to hear Art and to hear his guests and talking about stuff that you don't normally hear guys in the public talking about.
Yeah.
So there's a reason to come to you.
I was just saying people like anybody's like, oh, I can make my own radio show now. And like the idea
you can.
Like
you can. I support anyone tells me that they're gonna make a podcast. I go, oh, that's great. Just you know, if they ask for advice, I'm like, just be good.
Yeah.
Learn to talk, learn to communicate you can say have fun with it, but no, it's just be good.
Yeah.
Cause I've heard podcasts and people say, what do you think? And I go, it's good. No, really. What do you think? No, it's terrible. Your quality sucks, but I know you just started, so you can work past that.
Yeah.
So conversation, long pauses, 9 people talking over each other. Like all those crutch words. It's like no one's going to listen to this.
Yeah.
If you look, there's a million podcasts out there and 1% of that are actually highly rated. And 1% of that are making the multi-million dollars. So you've got a multi fraction of the entire genre doing anything productive and making money.
No doubt, man. Love you taking me to church. Let's talk about Would You Kindly with Brian Johnson. Talk about how that show came to be, man.
That was because when I came over to Compound, Keith initially wanted me to bring the radio show over there to do the video version. And the people on my show at the time just didn't want to do that. They didn't really want to go over to Compound. So that was fine. I was there working in another capacity anyway. So, we gave it some time. I was trying to figure stuff out. And then Keith comes up to me one day and he goes, you know, part of the reason I brought you over here is that you were going to do a show and you haven't done a show. I said, no, but I fixed all your other things. I don't really think I needed to worry about me coming on and like, hey, where's my show? But that was fine. So I came up with an idea and I said, well, I need somebody to hire it. Who fits this world? Because a lot of radio people and other people aren't really as in tune with the Compound Media audience or the vibe that they go for. Hey, I just said vibe, but
it's all right. I get you. You can let it slide. We're good.
You beep that out. Leave the earlier, but beep the vibe part out. You're trying to do like what the audience would actually tolerate, I'll say over there. Yeah. And I said, well, you know, I'm friends with Brian. He's great on his podcast. Tell Him Steve Dave. It's a huge podcast. And I said, he loves being a guest on the shows here. I said, well, maybe he'd want to do something here. And I talked to him and he was all for it. And, it took a while to figure out what it was. And then we just realized it's, you know, two Gen Xers, to quote The Simpsons, old men yell at cloud kind of thing. So we go on there and it's just, you know, it's almost get off my lawn, kids, but it's not really turning the hose on them. It's just it's Bartles and James. You're sitting there on a rocker and go, look at this guy. What is this guy doing? Look at that car. That's pretty much it. It's like we're talking to ourselves. We're not preaching to these people how they need to change their lives.
Yeah.
It's just us discussing how we are disgusted with everybody else.
Nice. One more question before we go into fatherhood. One of the things that I could probably talk about, like my niche in like food is like cereals, right? Like old school cereals now, all that good stuff.
Okay.
You have an Instagram handle called The Consumer.
Right.
I love how you check out different foods. And like, again, going back to the Massive Done guys, Jay and Mike said, if you get Art talking about food, he's just going to go off. And when we have food episodes, Mike says it's great because I actually talk on that series. For you, man, what started that whole consumer thing up?
The Consumer started with I would always bring stuff in because, you know, doing the show or that early in the morning, I got so bored of just any kind of breakfast at that time. Just eating in the morning became annoying. And I just didn't want it. Like, my breakfast would be like 11, 12 o'clock in the day where I would go have lunch and that would be my breakfast. But, you know, sometimes when we were doing like 5-6 hours between the terrestrial and the satellite, you're there for a long time. So you need to have something. So I used to bring different little things in to my studio, which was next to their studio, so I could control the station and the feeds and all of that stuff to where it was going. So Ope used to see on the camera, I'd have all these little things, and he started making fun of that. I'd have those little flip things that you would pour into your bottle of water.
Yeah.
And then I had the packets with the like four C.
Yep.
They make the breadcrumbs. They make an iced tea, lemon iced tea too. In those things. And then I got the Lipton's one. So I was always pouring something into the water, and he used to annoy the fat of him. And he goes, "You always have to have a treat with something. Everything always has to be extra. You can't just enjoy." Meanwhile, this is eating bland steel cut oats with some blueberries in it. And then he has a bowl of kashi like in the first hour. You're like, it's like, no wonder you're running to the bathroom all the time. Yeah, he'll outlive me probably. But, you know, at least I'm having fun and enjoying what I enjoy. And then I always had these different treats and stuff. And then because Roland was a foodie too, but on a bigger scale, he was more like a restaurant and bakery kind of person. I was the ground level with the supermarket stuff and finding all these weird things. And I would bring stuff in and every now and then. So Ope just kept saying, he's such a consumer. You just consume. And then over time, he started to realize one day he said to Anne, he goes, it's like, all this time I had it wrong. And he goes, the rest of the country is like Iraq. It's not like us. They don't think, you know, that they're above all this stuff. He goes, they love every time we make fun of them. Some people are asking where we can get that stuff. So I started making an Instagram, taking photos of the food and then putting my reviews out there. The big criticisms I get for it, if you want to go the consumer, all one word on Instagram, is that people think I just hate everything. And I do sometimes, but I do point out, I said, look, try it for yourself. I don't like this. I think this is terrible. And people say, why don't you write about reviews about stuff you like? I do. They're in there.
Yeah.
But I'm not one of these food blogs that constantly is kissing Nestle's or, you know, Frito-Lay or something like that for every product that come out. So they'll get the products all the time. And their criticism is like, well, it's a little, this could have used a bit more powder on the chip, but otherwise it was spot on. It's like, no, it wasn't. It wasn't. It was a chemical burn. All this flaming hot garbage that kids love. You go take, there's no flavor. You're just burning your taste buds with chemicals. And then they wonder why they're getting sick, because they're inhaling bags of flaming hot everything. So I write these reviews and I go, look, I think this, I was so excited for this thing. It's total garbage. I love my favorite drink of all time, Arnold Palmer's. And it's not the official branded Arnold Palmer like Arizona Iced Tea makes. It's mixing lemonade and iced tea. If you have good lemonade and a good brewed black unsweetened tea, I love that.
Nice.
I try the Arnold Palmer products from Arizona. They're terrible. They're terrible. And I know they have the licensing for it, and you get the can for 99 cents, the tall boy thing.
Yeah.
They're not good at all. And that really is disappointing. And every time they put out something under the Arnold Palmer brand, they just had Arnold Palmer gummies. I tried those out. I'm like, these are nonsense too. It's like you're just tasting high fructose corn syrup in this. And I love Arnold Palmer. I don't love their branding, but I love Arnold Palmer. So it's things like that that's disheartening. And I always put, look, this is just my opinion. And of course, as always, try it for yourself.
Yeah.
And then when I rave about things, I'm like, go get it now. I like this. I actually like this. Go get it before it's off the shelf.
I just love it, especially going off about like the different Arnold Palmers and all that. For me, like I said, cereal, like I was excited because
I do cereal too. I love cereal.
Being like a Star Wars geek and the Mandalorian, and I saw the box, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's kind of like Pac-Man, or it was like the old Clone Wars episode 2 cereal. And I thought it was going to be just corn puffs, but it was like fruity corn puffs with marshmallows. I'm like, you don't put fruit and marshmallows together. I wasn't a fan of that. So that was kind of, that was my big,
but they do it now. There's
everything is fruit and marshmallows. It shouldn't be. It should be corn and marshmallows, right?
There's a Fruity Pebbles, like a birthday cake, Fruity Pebbles with marshmallows. Yeah. They make Fruit Loops with marshmallows. They do one of the best cereals that you don't need to alter, and they constantly are altering it, Frosted Flakes.
Flakes, yep.
They put marshmallows in that. They have cinnamon balls with Shaq's face on it for no reason. they're gonna like that's gonna do something. I just reviewed the new Captain Crunch, which is the Captain Crunch caramel.
Oh, I didn't like that.
You didn't?
No,
I'm not a caramel fan at all, and it's caramel. I don't, none of you caramel people, but caramel. And I was like, it's the choco berry with the Captain Crunch. It's fine, and the caramel's in there. It adds a little to it. I'm not a big caramel fan, but I didn't mind it. I thought it was going to be worse than it was, and it actually wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I'm a caramel fan, but like, I just, to me, I was just like, eh. There was something about it that was like, eh. Give me a thing of all berries.
Yeah, that oops all berries one, right?
That's legit. Because as a kid, I always remember taking like, you know, Cap'n and Crunch or the Cap'n and Crunch berries.
Right.
And you'd eat the corn first, and then you'd have just the berries, and then there you go. So they saved me the trouble. All right. Main reason why I wanted to bring you on here is talk about fatherhood. When you found out you were going to be a dad, what was going through your mind?
It was unexpected. I didn't expect it to happen. We were trying for years and it just wasn't working out. I'm like, all right, I guess this is not going to happen. And, you know, because we're older, you know, I'm in my early 40s, and pandemic brought some weird shit to everybody's lives this year. Yeah. In the past year. And then all of a sudden, you know, I get told, like, this is happening. What? It is? Yeah. Okay. Well, let's give it a little time, because there's like a grace period that I learned about, that you don't say anything to people until you know you get past a certain threshold.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, this doesn't look like there's going to be complications. It looks like the pregnancy is going to proceed.
Usually after the first trimester, you can start telling other people than just like the close immediate friends. That's what like the whole, like, I think that's what usually people do, in my opinion.
See, I thought it was like a month or so, but yeah, maybe you're right, in the first trimester. And so we were going on for a little while. And I said, you know what, let's just not say anything. Let's just wait and see. Okay. And then, you know, enough time passed, and like, we should start telling everybody. What if we don't tell anybody? What? Yeah. What if we don't tell anybody? And here's why. And I explained it, and she went with it. So we told immediate family. They knew, parents, siblings. Didn't tell anybody else. Didn't tell friends. Didn't tell coworkers. Didn't tell bosses. Didn't any of this stuff, until the point where she had to let her work know, you know, obviously, because, you know, in 3 months, she's not going to be here. So that's going to be a thing. I didn't tell anybody. I didn't know social media, no radio mentions, no nothing. Anthony, who owns Compound Media, I didn't tell him until 2 days before. And I showed him the sonogram thing, and he's like, what? Really? Yeah. And he's like, oh, that's great. Congrats. He's like, when is it due? I said, Wednesday. And he said, what? And we were sitting at the bar across the street, and, you know, he's eating and doing his show prep before his show. I said, Wednesday. And he started laughing. He goes, no, really? I go, no, really? And I said, look at the date on the sonogram. And he saw it was back from September or somewhere in there. And this was, by the way, I couldn't go in for the sonogram, which, you know, you usually want to be a part of. I had to sit in my car on FaceTime because of COVID restrictions while she was in there by herself, all masked, all wrapped up and everything. And then they just had one of the assistants holding the phone on the machine so I could see the sonogram before they do the printouts and stuff. And then when she came, I didn't know they had printouts. I forgot about that. And she came out with the printout. I'm like, I shouldn't have even been here. I'm like, it's not like she needed to be driven. Like, why did I waste my time sitting in a parking lot for 45 minutes before they called me, and I couldn't be in there for any of this stuff? Yeah. So that was aggravating. But, you know, so we family knew. And then as we got closer, those who needed to know were finally told. And then the day she was born, about half an hour after the delivery, and we're in the recovery room, and they bring her in and they give her to me, and I'm holding her for a little bit. And I said, oh, I got to do this. And because I don't like Facebook profiles, Instagram profiles, where it's all about their kids and it's not about them. Not like you can't mix it up and share family moments.
Yeah.
But when your whole thing is just you using your kids for likes and follows, all of this stuff. And I used to work with somebody, not on ONA, but in the company I used to work, that still hashtags their kids' names in every post. And I still follow this person because it just keeps, it gets me mad, and it keeps me in the right mindset of never to do anything that this person, she keeps finding new ways to piss me off with her Instagram account with her kids. And I go, I'm learning so much from hating this person. And she's not a terrible person, but she, what she's doing is terrible. I learned so much from what she posts and how she does it. And I go, I know now never to do this ever with my kid, ever.
Yeah.
So the half an hour after she was born, I bit the bullet. I took a little mini selfie with her. And, you know, you can't really see her too much in there. And I posted it online and people thought I was with them and people thought I was making this up. And somebody goes, it's like, I don't get the joke, pal. What is this? I go, no, it's real. I had a kid. I just didn't say anything. And that was the only thing I did.
Yeah.
Post that photo that I have a kid. And then I haven't posted anything else about her. Now on my shows, I try to keep the baby stuff out of it.
Yeah.
But when it does spill into my life, where if we were late to a recording for some reason, or if something happened that's a bigger story that needs to use the situation with the kid as a jumping point to get to whatever, I'll do that. But yeah, I'm not going to come up and like, here's like, guess what she did today, and guess where we're going. It's like, I'm not doing any of that stuff. Nobody wants to hear that. And
you know, just like the playlist, right? They're like, yeah, I'm good.
From years of listening radio, nobody wants to hear this. You know, if you said, hey, I went to Legoland with my kid this weekend, let me tell you about the stuff that I bought. That's how you use it. You went there, I took the kids down to Disney, and then, oh, let me tell you what happened to me at Epcot Center. And, you know, that's where you incorporate it. You don't go, oh, my kids, you know, oh, you know why? Here's why I can't also do it. Because I set a precedence that I hate when kids are holding the blackboard for their first day of anything, and it's all over Facebook. And, you know, I used to rally really hard against that. And I said, this is so stupid. Why do you do this to your kids? And people used to yell at me and say, you know, it's like, you're attacking kids. No, I'm attacking the parents who are putting these poor kids through this. And I said, why do this? And they said, don't you know there's more important things to worry about? And at the time there was. And now we talked about it again. Not, I think, about kids going back to school. And I said, oh, they're going to start doing this again. And again, I get attacked. Don't you know there's more important things to talk about? Yeah, there is. And I still don't want to talk about them. Like, I don't want to talk about COVID and politics and the world burning around us and everything. I am going to go after you and your ugly kids for holding up these blackboards saying it's her first day at her eighth grade cheerleader thing. And I don't care.
Yeah.
The fact that they graduate any grade and there's signs on people's lawns all over the neighborhood. It's like congratulating, you know, young Jessica for her fourth grade graduation. Nobody cares about a fourth grade. I don't care about a kindergarten or an eighth. You know what I'm going to care about? My kid's high school graduation. That I'll care about. Then she's on her own. Like, she graduates college, I'll be there and I'll be very proud and happy for her too. But first grade, fourth grade, sixth grade, like, I don't care. Who cares? I'm not spending money for a sign to put on my lawn that some kid in her grade is probably going to steal anyway and throw it into the woods or put it on somebody else's house, because that's what I would have done as a kid if that was going on while we were growing up.
I'm glad you're still living by that code. I love it. Talk about something that your daughter has kind of showed you about yourself, about life in general. Like, what is some of the, what is things that, I mean, of course she's super young, but like, just what is something that you've learned about life or about yourself in general from her?
Well, a few things. One is personality, but I'll get into that in a second. The other thing is the adulting. I hate that term too, but when you have to realize some things as an adult that you didn't have to deal with before, like life insurance, figuring that out, and how annoying those people are, because you just check, you went on to Policy Genius or whatever that thing is to get a quote on something, and then they're contacting you 3-4 times. When can we schedule a call? We're not. I just asked for a quote. I don't need you. If I want something, I'll come to you. I don't need that stuff. So figuring that out, figuring out health insurance, even though I have that, but what a pain that is that I can't put her on the health insurance until, like, I had to wait a month for her Social Security card to come in.
Yep.
And I had to wait like a same amount of time for the county to sign off on a birth certificate that I had to pay for and all of this. So I was like, well, you know, and I have family, like, well, we want to make, you know, start an account for her. What's her account? And I was like, I can't start a bank account because I don't have this stuff yet. And I'm waiting on that. Like, everything takes forever. When you're so used to just doing it for yourself, now you have to do it for another person. Figuring all this stuff out, I'm like, oh yeah, this kid's gonna need dental. oh yeah, this kid's gonna need vaccinations, this kid's gonna need clothing, you like all of this stuff. So you know, that it takes you out of worrying about what am I going to do today now that I woke up.
Yeah,
now it's like, well, I got to get up because she needs to get up, and then I got to change her 8 times today, and I got to feed her 6 times today, and then how do I make her sleep as much as possible. So you know, like, it's all of those things. The personality that I discovered is, for the first almost 2 months, she takes things so seriously. Now, she looks a lot like me.
Yeah.
And I thought she looked like me too, because she's got my awful spiky hair and her face and stuff. When her personality started showing a little bit, I would lay her down in her little pack and play bassinet thing. And my wife has a mobile thing on top. You flip it and it spins, it plays music, whatever. She'd be sitting there looking like this all the time. I'll sit to go. She just get this really evil death stare at the mobile. She hated the mobile. You just stare at it. And I said that she looks like Maggie Simpson when Maggie's staring at the kid with the unibrow. The kid's being wheeled down the sidewalk and she's against the glass like this. It's like she has that look. That's what she has. And I took a, I'm not going to show the photo, but I'll show it to you privately.
Yeah.
A photo of her looking, and I'm looking at it and go, oh my God, this kid's me. You know, like, this kid has, like, she's way too serious about the stupidest thing. She hates this mobile, and you lay her down, she's all, like, she'll focus on it. And then you just see her whole demeanor change. And I went, oh, wow. I said, do I do that? And my wife's like, yeah, all the time. And I was like, oh no. So I think the biggest thing I learned is that I need to expect a lot of me that I don't realize is me coming back at me, being reflected at me. So her is becoming me, and it's making it about me again.
So nice.
I didn't want to make it about me, but here we are.
Oh, Eric, I love it. One more question before the Fatherhood Quick Five. Usually I ask dads, like, hey, what is one big piece of advice you'd offer to new dads? I'm going to kind of change it up for you, because your daughter's kind of young. What is the best advice you receive from someone? Because, you know, because as soon as you were kind of smart in the sense of, like, just telling the people you wanted to tell that, you know, your wife was pregnant. But then when you became a dad, people kind of knew, people are probably throwing so much advice to you, right? It's like when you go to Disney, everyone's like, oh, you got to do this, you got to do this. And it's like, all right, let me just get there. I'll work on my own. But for you, what is something that someone told you, it's like, yeah, that's legit advice?
I'll start it off by saying that I didn't receive a lot of advice.
Okay.
I got some, but most of it was people with the, and this is when I learned that everyone is just a hack, is that everyone was saying, oh, you better get used to, get all the sleep you can now. You're going to remember when you used to love to sleep. Like, everyone kept saying this nonsense. Now I'm 3 months in, I understand what they're saying. In fact, we had, some extended hospital issues with her. So it was a little bit higher than just stress level and everything, than just having a baby and taking home and how am I going to take care of this person? I never once doubted in my life, and I don't know if many people can say this, but there's plenty of people in my life that can testify to this. Even in high school, I kind of realized, I'm like, that I'd be a good dad, that I wanted to be a dad, you know? And I used to always say this, and it didn't always sit well, especially with, you know, the wife right now, but I used to say, it's like, I'm probably going to be a terrible husband, but I'll be a great, fantastic dad. And I said, if she doesn't want to stay, she can leave. Just the kid stays with me.
Yeah. You
know, that's how I always felt about this. That's not the right head to go into this, but I've had that since I was in high school, and I still stand by it.
Yeah.
So a lot of people offered me the dumbest sayings. It wasn't really advice. It was all cliche stuff. And I go, what century are you from? Like, who cares about that? None of this matters. Like, oh, like, you got to be used, the kid's going to be. I'm like, well, it's your fault. You're putting the kid to bed at 7 o'clock at night. That's why the kid's up at 4 or 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
I said, I put my kid to bed at 11. Like, she gets a last bottle. It's oversized, more than, you know, I balance out her needs for the day. But I lean a little heavy on that last bottle so that she's in a comatose state. She gets drunk and she's passing out and she's eating while she's sleeping. And then I changed it. I put her to bed. And guess what? The other day, she slept 12 hours.
Nice.
12 hours. Now I've had her in an average 7 to 9, but that one day hitting 12, I'm like, this is fantastic.
Well done, man.
Yeah. So when everyone's like, oh, you know, you got to get used to the morning. No, you're dumb enough to let your kid go to bed super early so you can have your night. Give up your night so you can have the morning is what I'm saying. You can sleep in there.
Look at that.
Advice that I got was this. Be present. And it didn't really dawn on me like, well, yeah, of course I'm going to be there. But a lot of people aren't, like even moms too. Like if they go back to work and whatever, they have other people taking care of their kids, daycare, nannies, whatever, parents. And I've had women tell me, she's like, just be present, be there for these little things. Just if you're going to sit there and watch TV, hold her while you're watching TV for a few hours. And I never doubted that I would do that. I wouldn't do that. Sorry.
Yeah.
But then I've been seeing over time and I've heard other stories about how people raise their kids. And I go, why would a guy not want to be there for his kid? You know, like I understand if the relationship goes bad or, you know, you're fighting, you do whatever, but be there for the kid.
Yeah.
I have a friend from high school. She's going through stuff and she has a daughter and she's been divorced from her husband for a few years now. And some of the things that this guy does and doesn't do, and just makes them miserable. It's like, why would you do that?
Yep.
But then all these little aspects, and I start viewing other people, friends, family that I know are fathers. Then it's like when Homer was trying to find a date for Patty, and he'd be staring and he'd look at Principal Skinner and he's like, pros, this, cons, possible homosexual, you know, like all that stuff's going on the screen and looking there. I'm looking at people like that now that are fathers. I sit there and go, all right, I know I've known him all my life. Why is he a good dad? Like my brother, why is he a good dad? And I'll sit there and go through the pros, any of the cons that I'm aware of and stuff. And I go, oh, okay. And I just see how people are. I'm paying attention to that now. I didn't before, but that whole be present, be there for her, you know, for the milestones and even the small things in her life. And I can't imagine not doing that unless, you know, I died. I can't imagine not being there for her for any of this stuff. So I guess that really was the best advice, was be present, because I was always ready planning to do it. I didn't think I needed to be advised on it. But seeing now with, you know, new eyes exploring the world and people I know, and I go, oh, OK, I see why people aren't doing this, or I see why people are doing this. And this is a big deal. So I guess be present with your kid is the biggest advice that I got.
Great.
It was a very long-winded answer, but
no, Eric, it was great because I think you're already there. Like the bottle hack, I think is fantastic. And like, I think a lot of people listen to this, like, you know, hindsight's 2020, but like, yeah, probably should have done that. Like they probably, I'd rather sleep.
Don't put your kid to bed. Yeah. It's like, oh, I just got home. We had dinner, put the kid to bed at 8 so that we have, you know, some adult time. We can watch TV. Look, for the next 2 to 3 hours, you're watching TV. You're talking about bills in life that you don't care about, and then you go to bed. Like that kid could have just been up there in the corner. So what? Let him sit on the iPad till 11. They'll probably fall asleep anyway, and you just carry him, put him to bed. And guess what? They're going to sleep past 6 in the morning, and you're going to be grateful that they did.
Nice. And one quick thing about being present, like I for me, man, like my daughters are 13 and 11, and we, you know, we've always been close and all that stuff, but with this pandemic we've been doing a lot more stuff together. And I think just listening to them, like being present and listening to them saying that you care, that they'll come to you and talk to you for stuff. Because everyone's like, oh, you got daughters, great. You know, just watch out when they become teenagers and all that stuff. I'm like, yeah, that's great. But that's being cliche. And it's like, if you're just there and you treat them with respect, they're going to treat you with respect. So
yeah, and I think if you, I hate to say the role model stuff, but like you're the dad, you have no choice. You're the example of the male figure in her life. So if you're there and you're good, and they're going to want to look, I mean, not in every case, but they're going to want to look for somebody that treats them as well as her father did, or how her father treated her mother. And that's what they're going to look for. And that's, you know, I was probably still going to intimidate any of her boyfriends and, you know, threaten them, or, you know, just if you touch her, I'm going to kill you, that kind of stuff. Cause that's a rite of passage. I'm allowed to do that. That's very old school. You're not allowed to do that anymore. You're like, you're not allowed to hit your kids. You're not allowed to do that. It's like, all right, well, some of that makes sense, but I'm allowed to intimidate the boyfriend so that they don't mess around.
Yeah.
That's just the right of a dad. But yeah, the way you treat, like I said this on the show the other day, and some people got a little pissed at it who have kids, but I don't think they fully understood. Brian Johnson on Would You Kindly asked me, he's like, so how's the kid going? I said, I love her, but she's boring, right? And he started laughing. He goes, yeah, I get that. I go, yeah. I said, everyone keeps telling me cherish this time now that it goes fast. They grow up. And I said, yeah, I do. I'm, and again, being present and all, I said, but I wouldn't mind if she skipped ahead a couple years so I could talk to her and know who she is. Like I can learn about her. I know she'll be difficult because she'll be active and doing all these things. And the kid sleeps right now. But most of the time my job is to keep her fed and keep her sleeping so she can grow and develop. But there's nothing, I can't talk to her. I can't share a movie or an experience with her. And I keep thinking, I'm like, man, I can't wait till she's older so I can take her to these places. And I was thinking about the other day, it's like, wow, the toy stores don't exist. And that's going to be said. I can't just take her to a toy store and go, look, this is where all the toys are. You and I growing up, how great was it going to a Toys R Us where it wasn't even just everything on the shelves? You had to look at video games as they flipped the thing on the wall, and you took the ticket, go buy it at the cash, and then you go to the cage, and then they bring out the big Nintendo, or they bring out the video game. It's wrapped in plastic, and you're like, wow, this is a big ordeal because it's not even on the floor. It's back there. You don't have that now. And Target and Walmart, have a couple of aisles, but it's nothing like what it used to be.
Yep.
So it's things like that. It's like, oh, I get to take her to Disney for the first time. I get to, when her
wait mom... on that, by the way, too. Wait until like everyone's like, oh, get like just wait.
Oh, I
until...
am.
Yeah, okay, good.
I am. I'm waiting till 5. I've already had this argument with family members where I've said, I'm going to take her when she's 5. They're like, no, you could take her like 2 or 3. I go, no, she'll recognize a character, but she won't remember the experience. And that's expensive. So I'm going to go when she's 5. Because she'll recognize the characters. I can take some photos. She may have some memories ingrained in her at that point. And, then she can take her autograph book and get the princesses or the villain, hopefully the villain, all that fun stuff and enjoy it more. So I know where I'm spacing things out with this, but I'm looking already ahead. Like I want to rush to it, even though people say, don't do it. No, I want to rush to it just because I want to experience it with her. I want to know who she is.
I think a lot of people, especially dads, want to have that like camaraderie and like, hey, let's play with dinosaurs. Let's play with Master Universe, whatever the case may be. So, I mean, a lot of guys feel that, and sometimes people won't say that, but I appreciate the honesty.
It's like mom's being a pain in the ass today, huh? Yeah. Want to go get a Happy Meal and go to the toy store? Yeah, let's do it. We get in the car. Where you going? We're going out. See ya. You can do whatever you want for the day. And then I take the kid. We go to the movies. We go do all that fun stuff. That's what I want to do.
Nice. Love it.
I want to be weekend dad, but everyday dad,
No doubt. Fatherhood Quick 5. Here we go. Again, this is stuff for the future. Favorite family movie. What movie? Just kind of like you're going to wait for Disney for when she gets to a certain age to appreciate a kid's movie. What are you excited to share with her?
What kid's movie?
Yeah.
Oh, because I was going to say Back to the Future, because I would love trying to explain to her why Marty and his mom are making out in a car. And like... It's just going to be fun and uncomfortable at the same time. Cause I was, 5, 6 when I saw it on HBO and I didn't, figure it all out. But as far as a kid's movie, do people usually say Disney movies? Like, is that
No, people say like, Penguins, Matt, like usually I'll say the favorite family movie just because they're at the age, whatever age they are, they can like, see a movie with their kids. But because your daughter's really young, it can be any movie. We'll keep Back to the Future because
I'll tell. UHF.
Oh, UHF. Nice.
You know why? Because it's not a kid's movie, but there's nothing offensive in it. And it's like a living cartoon the way Weird Al did it. I would love for her to see when they drink from the fire hose and the kid goes flying and the wheel of fish and the kid, the guy licking the turtle and using it as a suction cup for the ceiling. And like that's kind of fun. I would love to sit there with my kid and watch UHF.
Doesn't have to be a kid song, whatever the case may be. What artist, musician, band can't you wait to like share with her?
I mean, I love Huey Lewis in the News, but nice. That might be so dated for a kid. So something
my kids have. We saw Back to the Future. They love, Power of Love, Back in Time, all those stuff. Man.
I love Huey Lewis so much. And I also love Billy Joel. But again, I think that would be a little too slow for a kid to like and appreciate. So I would say like Real Big Fish.
Okay.
Real Big Fish is very upscale, poppy, dancey kind of stuff. It's a high energy, something fun like that. And it's not like Less Than Jake is sort of the same thing, but there's a lot of depression and mental health issues in a lot of their songs. But Real Big Fish is all about, drinking beer, riding a roller coaster. I'm doing the skank. My girlfriend's got a girlfriend now. And all those fun things that a kid needs to know. I think I would do like Real Big Fish.
Nice. Maybe it's Disney. Describe the perfect family vacation. Where would it be?
Honestly, for me, I love cruises.
Okay.
I love cruises. I think you could do both. I think a Disney cruise down to the Caribbean would be a blast.
Nice.
That would be my favorite for me.
Cool. You mentioned this early in the beginning of our chat. You've got the vault. What is something that, you know, because again, you're pop culture collector just like me, nerd, right, geek, all that good stuff. What is one of your most prized possessions that you have?
Prized possessions that I have?
Yeah, like geek wise, like collectible, whether it's, you know, if people follow you on social media, they see like Ryan Reynolds said it signed a Deadpool. I mean, that's a small example because there's so many different people that like celebrity signs some stuff like you were mentioning earlier. But is there something that is just like one of your best pieces of like, you know, pop culture you got?
I have two. One is the signed Mike Tyson's punch-out. It's the original box cartridge, nice, everything in there. So you see me holding it with him before he signed it, and then he signed it after this. And this was one of those things I was telling you about when people would say, where did you find this stuff? Because when Tyson came in, some people were looking for gloves and boxing stuff. And I went right, I had the video, I saved that box that was back there. I went, oh my God, he's coming in. So I brought that in to sign. So that like is one of my favorites. The other actually that trumps this one is on the wall over there, which I can't get down right now, is a bunch of autographed, drawn, signed things from Matt Groening, plus a handwritten letter. So when I was a kid, I wrote him a letter that I was, because I was taping it on VHS from the Tracy Ullman show in the 80s.
Yes.
And then when the series started and all that, and I just sent him I figured out the address to 20th Century Fox out in California. I sent him a letter saying, you know, I'm a big fan, I have everything on tape, and I guess, you know, whatever a kid stupidly writes. And he wrote me back. I got this big brown envelope and it said The Simpsons on the mailing label. I open it up. There's a 8x10 glossy of him that he drew all over it, and he signed and dated. And then there was a thing that he drew of the Simpsons family, all like they're together. And it says, yo, Eric Nagel on that stuff. And then there's a letter. He's like, sounds like you have a bigger collection than I do. This is fantastic. Some free drawings for you. Hope you love it. I was like, oh my God. So that is behind museum tinted glass, you know, right, so that the sun can't destroy it. Nothing can happen to it. But that is probably my favorite collectible of all time. That supersedes everything else that I have.
Love it, man. Especially the Tracy Ullman show with the Simpsons. I was like, my sister and I used to take like a boombox and record, just like, we didn't have the VHS tape, but we would record the audio.
Just to hear it?
Just to hear it, man.
Yeah, I used to tape the episodes because it was on at night. I wasn't allowed to watch it.
Yeah.
So I had figured out, we had one of those silver, I think it was, the brand was Emerson, silver Emerson VCRs that had the color coded buttons.
Yeah.
And the remote was plugged in by a cable. You know, it wasn't a wireless thing, but I figured out how to set the timer to record. So I would set it at night because they didn't watch TV in the living room at night. And it was on like 10 or 11 o'clock on Fox. Would record there. And then the next day in the morning, I'd get up, I'd take the tape out, you know, and leave it upstairs. And then I just would tape all the episodes on there. And that's how I learned to watch them. Because nice. At that time, it was Gary Shandling Show and Married with Children. My mom wasn't going to let me watch any of that.
Yeah.
So I used to have to sneak and do it.
Nice. Well done. And lastly, top three words you hope your daughter would use to describe as a dad. What would they be?
Top three?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's really hard. What you answer for me. Let me think about that. What's your answer for that?
Funny, present, and loving.
All right. I'm going to say has more toys.
Well done. Tell the fine folks where people, I mean, probably people already following you on social media and know where to find you, but tell the fine folks where they can find you, sir.
Social media, it's E-Rock Radio, all one word, across the board on all the social media platforms. That's where you can find all the lunacy that I put up. And we mentioned The Consumer earlier, which is only on Instagram, The Consumer, one word. And it's just my food reviews. And I'm not lying to you. I'll tell you if it sucks, I'll tell you if it's good. That's what's there. There's no backing for it. Nobody's going to buy it because I talk so certain products because they're just god awful. But you can find me there. For the shows, if you want to check out the shows, the first show, It's Eric Nagel, is the radio show I do. It's on iHeartRadio. You can find that anywhere podcasts are found, mostly on the iHeartRadio app. We get that once a week. And then the other show I do with Brian Johnson from the world of Kevin Smith movies. He's Tell 'em Steve Dave. If you ever watched Mallrats,
yep.
And they do a podcast called Tell 'em Steve Dave. He does the show with me called Would You Kindly. That's available on compoundmedia.com if you want to subscribe there. Or if you want to check out older episodes, you can go to Would You Kindly Show, all one word, on YouTube.
Awesome. Very cool. Thanks again for switching the time. We were supposed to record yesterday, but something for my kids' school popped up, and you're like, yeah, we can do it tomorrow. So I appreciate that. You know, like I said, big fan of everything you've been doing in radio. And, you know, you guys, you know, you and everybody at your team were like really nice to Mike, Jay, and I. And just to have you on here talk about fatherhood, man, this is my wheelhouse. And of course, now your wheelhouse too. But I wish you continued success in the future, man. But it was a blast chatting with you, sir.
Thanks, man. Do you get a lot of crossover with this podcast and Masters of None, or is it two separate audiences?
Kind of two separate audiences.
Oh, okay, because Jay, as you mentioned, that Art does a show with on the other program. I've known Jay for years. We used to work in radio at WLIR in Long Island, where Jay was hosting a punk ska and indie rock show, and I worked for him for a little bit. And I think I'm the only one that worked with him that still talks to him. Because Dan Deacon blew up and doesn't acknowledge anybody anymore. And I don't know if Scotso's even alive. You know, and then there was like one or two other people. But yeah, it was homegrown because his, I guess his wife at the time used to answer the phones. And his dad had a camcorder and would tape the shows. It was a very, very mom and pop organization for all of that. And it was the best time, like 2 years, 3 years that show lasted.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. So because of Jay, I got to meet you and Mike and enjoyed all the stuff you were doing. And because of that show, I found this show that you do with all the father stuff. Your Kevin Smith episode I just listened to and was fantastic. So I've always been an admirer of what you're doing. And I always thought one day, I said, if I ever have a kid, I'm going to need to talk to Art about this. And then lo and behold, I had a kid. And then what was the first thing I told you?
Yeah, like, hey, I'm jumping on your show. I was like, nice.
Yeah, I said, I need to come on your show because I don't know what I'm doing. So
actually, you do. You sound like you know exactly what you're doing. So I love it.
I'm figuring this out as I go. But I've also been comparing to, I've seen how other people have raised their kids. And I'm like, no, that doesn't, I don't care if they say that's what you're supposed to do. That doesn't seem right. I'm not doing that. And I don't do that. My kid has nothing pink. You know, I'm starting her purple and black and white. So she's, you know, like, she's already being, you know, raised in Nightmare Before Christmas.
Nice.
So, you know, I think this is the way to go. I wanted to turn into some kind of like punk rock musician or weird cosplayer or something. So trying to set her down some other paths that normally people don't really go with.
But man, I love it. Yeah. Again, thanks for the time, man. And people, make sure you follow his work. He's doing a phenomenal job on all the different shows, and support this dude because he's a good dude. So thanks, man.
Yeah, forget my stuff. Tell them that you're listening to this show now. Tell them to support Artie's thing here. Go point all that stuff out. Don't need to promote
Art of Fatherhood, all that good stuff. Yeah, artoffatherhood.net. But people who are here are listening to it anyways. But this is, you're the guest. I got to treat you right. So again, thanks again, man. Appreciate
Fair enough. Thanks, right. man.
I hope you enjoyed this week's Art of Fatherhood podcast. And if you would be so kind, please leave a review, rating, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, please download, subscribe, and review. Really appreciate it. And also want to say a big thanks to our sponsor, RPACT. They do great things to help protect our kids when they're using tablets, smartphone, whatever the case may be. We want peace of mind, and RPACT helps bring that peace of mind when our kids are growing up in this digital age. Go to rpact.com for more information.
Thanks for listening to the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and go to artoffatherhood.net.